All right, okay. The river of life flowing into us becomes ankle deep as a stream that fills that Jerusalem in us. You know, it needs to increase if it's going to be knee deep to Judea, waist deep to Samaria, out of our depths, filling the ends of the earth. So it's going wider. Now, if you let something go wider that's not very deep, you get a mile wide and an inch deep. And that is never very good. God would rather you have an inch deep and an inch wide and a mile deep. Because you don't want to be just spread out. You want to be spread out at the right level. So it's got to flow. The increase of the flow has got to come from our innermost being outwards, going deeper and deeper. Because the ankle deep is enough for you in your life. You know, you can draw on that, you can drink it, you can even lie in it. But it isn't enough for those who you've got to give away to. So it's got to get deeper so you can give it away. Because everything about what God calls us to do is to be a blessing to others. So I can be selfishly enjoying the dancing in the river. And we used to have lots of dance in the river years ago, didn't we? We're dancing in the river of life. And actually most of it was just selfish. We're just splashing around, enjoying ourselves, which is okay, but not where we want to go. So the deeper it goes, the more you can give away. And if you try and give away what's a little bit, then you don't have enough for yourself. So it has to go from that. So we got the Ezekiel 47 scripture. You know, he brought me to the back, to the door of the house, and behold, water was trickling under the threshold. That's what 99.9% of the church lives on. The trickle that's coming under the threshold. And that's enough to give you the fruit of the Spirit, gifts of the Spirit, but it isn't enough for us to do the expanding of the kingdom into the world. It just isn't. So you have this story, it reaches the ankles, the knees. So, no. Now, the bit I like is he measured the thousand. It's a river that could not ford, for the water had been risen enough to swim in, you know, and there were trees on the side of the river. You know, and it goes on, you know, the waters go out to the eastern region. Because remember, everything that flows out from heaven goes out the east gate. You know, so it flows out to the eastern region. That's why, is you know, the garden was in the east of Eden. So it's all east. And the waters become fresh. So you will be able to flow, when you take this out, to turn salt water fresh. Things that things can't live in, to turn them into fresh water. It will come about that every living creature which swarms in every place the river goes will live. So you can bring life to the dead. Now that can be physical dead, because we're called to raise the dead. But actually all the spiritual people who are dead, separated from God, you can bring life to. But you have to change the water from salt to fresh. So you have to carry a completely different flow, which is why it has to come out of heaven and flowing into the earth. Zechariah 9:10 says, he will speak peace to the nations, and his dominion will be sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. Because it's about dominion, it's about government, it's about rule. So every single person that you bring into salvation extends the kingdom, because they come under the lordship of Jesus, and then they give it away and they extend the kingdom, and they give it away and extend the kingdom. You know, and we could reach the whole world in a very short piece of time if we kept giving it away and they kept giving it away. And just a few years, you can reach the whole world with the gospel. You know, but we don't give it away. So we have to see this expanding out. Genesis 2:10, this is where it starts. The river flowed out of Eden to water the garden, and there it flowed, divided to become four rivers. So the water flowed out of heaven, which was Eden, where we went this morning, engaged the river of life. It goes to water the garden. Now that's the garden of our heart. It flows out there through the rivers of living water, through the chambers of our heart, outwards to water the world round us in our spheres. That river is increasing and expanding the kingdom. Isaiah 41:18. I will open rivers on the bare heights and springs in the midst of valleys. I will make a wilderness a pool of water and dry lands fountains of water. That is a description of you and me. And all of us, if we allow a flow to come through us. It's a great description, isn't it? No matter where you are, whether you're on the heights, in the valleys, in the wilderness, you can produce life. Isaiah 43:19. Behold, I will do something new. Now will it spring forth. Will you not be aware of it? I will even make a roadway in the wilderness, rivers in the desert. So don't be afraid of the world out there. They're looking for life. The life's in us. Let's start flowing it out. Ephesians 2:6, and he's raised us up with him, seated us with him in heavenly places in Christ. So whatever you do on the earth, and all creating that flow, it only happens as you take your position seated in the heavens. Most of what we've tried to do is give out and give out and give out for those who are that way inclined without having the source and about establishing the source in heaven. So every spiritual blessing, according to Ephesians 1:3, every spiritual blessing is in the heavenly places in Christ. So if we want the spiritual blessings in our lives to flow out into the world, we need to be in the heavens to do it. So that river has to flow from our position of authority in the realm of heaven where we're seated. And notice you seated, which means you're in a place of rest. So that throne is on your mountain. You have a mountain, which is you, your position of government in that realms, and every spiritual blessing is released so that those rivers flow. And those spiritual blessings become part of the rivers that flow out into the world. So you're being a blessing to every family of the earth. So you fill those expanded boundaries and you, with the life that you frame and create in the heavens. That's why it all has to be in on earth as it is in heaven first. So you release your words, your declarations, your decrees. You call things that be not as if they are. You create things that do not yet exist because you are history makers. So every decision you make is effectively bringing a change. So you have great power from that realm. You can assign the angelic realm to those spheres and specifically depending on what they are to do. So everyone individually has mountain spheres, corporate spheres if you're on benches with others. They're all part of your government. You need those, your personal spheres to be functioning for true corporate authority to function. We made it wasn't a mistake, it was all we knew how to do in one sense. But when we first, in terms of our mountains and our seven mountains, and we shared it and people came, we had no real understanding of how they were to do what they were needed to do. I didn't have legislative understanding like I do now. So we would do it differently now. You know, we would have a process that supported people in their journey, and we would find out how are they doing in their own lives in these areas in government, because we're not going to subject you to being in this position of responsibility when you're not learned to govern in your own life. So there's a level of maturity needed. And I'm not talking about maturity as in how old you are as a Christian or how old you are naturally, but a level of maturity and understanding government that enables you to function better. And we had some people who were keen, felt called, but very clearly struggled with the governmental aspects, particularly our health mountain. And they just kept getting sick, which is not too good of an advert for people who were ruling from health, is it? So we had to help them deal with the sickness and the issues of why they were being sick in their own lives so that they then can be empowered to help the rest of the church come into health and to spread that. So we have a different way of helping people to become part of government in mountains now, in which they meet with the bench of three, we share with them, they listen to our legislative teaching, and then they come back and ask any questions, and we have to be really clear that God is saying that they're okay to be in this place, because we don't want to put pressure on people that would then cause them to struggle. So it's important that you're ruling in your own life before you think about going taking the world, you know. So start with Jerusalem is the basic message. We all need to live beyond the veil so that everything is under our feet. Because if it isn't under your feet, you're not going to rule. Isaiah 9:6, a child will be born to us, a son given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders. So if he's the head, who's the shoulders? We are. So he places his government on us to rule, but he's always the head. And we're never the head, always the shoulders where his government rests. So it's important to know that. So here we have spirit, soul, and body, and we're expanding our territory. So this is going outwards, and we create this atmosphere around our life. Then we have the Jerusalem, for me, family areas, going outwards, you know, then I have Judea, for me that's church, then I have Samaria, for me that's the area I live in, because I'm part of a bench of three for our area, and then I'm also part of a bench of three for our region. Now that's now expanding into the nation. So I have a spheres of government which have expanded. I started with Jerusalem, and I still have to maintain Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is where the flow comes from. So if I don't look after Jerusalem, the ends of the earth will be in trouble, because I won't be able to do that unless something's flowing from inside. So another way of looking at it, I have my spheres of government, my seven spheres of government connected to that inner sphere. But I also have, and those are going to increase, but I also have some other spheres of government which are wider. So they are the corporate benches that I'm part of. And those are increasing. So everything's always increasing. So the fruits and gifts of the Spirit interact in our overlapping spheres of government. We need to maintain godliness. We need to demonstrate love. Everything flows in love. All the functions of our senses, spirit, soul, and body need to engage in this. It's not just a spiritual thing I do somewhere, off in the heavens somewhere. This is real. If I'm not filling my atmosphere with fruit of the Spirit, then I'm filling it with something else. So it's the love of God and his character and nature that I'm looking to flow into. So we are a spirit being, functioning as a living being, maturing into a godlike being, conformed to our eternal image of sonship. There is a progression of maturity that will bring us into a completely different understanding of how this works. So our spheres operate in relation to our mandates. If you haven't got a mandate, you don't go into any jurisdiction that's not yours. You know, so an area and region mandate are established for me. I have an ecclesia, embassies of heaven. They're all different mandates that we can all be part of. You know, I don't have authority for everything within all those spheres. Within our ecclesia, we have a bench of seven, we have a bench of 12, we have mountains. I carry no authority towards that other than to bless them. I can't tell them what to do. They have to do that themselves. My authority is to bless and to support and encourage. So I have to trust people to hear God for themselves and do it the way God's showing them. I have to let it go. You know, I've had to learn to do that, obviously. So I look at things and think, come on. But I'm much more relaxed about it, because it's okay. It takes as long as it takes, you know, and whatever God knows about the seasons, he knows all about it. You know, so many other people will have different spheres within the same government. So for Dallas, as we were saying earlier, you may have several benches of three, you may be involved in a bench of three, but there are many, many others you may know nothing about. You know, that's perfectly acceptable. It's what happens. And you don't try and do the stuff they're supposed to do. Don't try and do it all. Do what you have the mandate and authority to do. That means you can keep operating governmentally. As soon as you step outside of that jurisdiction, and this comes often when you see a problem, all this is happening. We need to do something about it. And it's like, who said you need to do something about it? Well, my emotions did. Well, sometimes your emotions could be a good servant, and sometimes they can be a very bad master. It's good to be moved compassion, but make sure it's the compassion which is moving you from heaven and not the compassion that's moving you from just what you see. Because you can get into trouble doing a whole load of things, and God will call others to do that. I mean, I had this instance, I think it was last year, and I was watching the TV, and I saw the news, and the news had this massive hurricane. They said it was going to be the biggest hurricane they'd ever seen, 200 mile an hour winds, and it was approaching Mexico, and it was going to hit the south of the US. And I'm looking at it thinking, whoa, and this big red blotch on the radar screen. So I'm sort of thinking, okay, do I need to do something about that? So, because I don't want that hit in the south of the US, because I'm going to the south of the US some days. It's like, I don't want it devastated. So it's like, so I'm sort of moved to do something. So I think, okay, I go and ask God, do I have a mandate to do something? No, I have not got a weather mountain or anything like that, but I know I carry authority, and if I'm mandated, I can do anything. So I went, and he said, no, it's okay, I've got that covered, someone else is doing it. So I thought, great, awesome. I relaxed, didn't think anything about it, and there are several people who did. You know, it was really funny. Because then I was talking a couple of months later to somebody, and I was talking, they were talking about weather mandates and all this stuff, and people asking. So I just mentioned this thing. I said, well, look, I didn't do it, but someone did it because it changed, it hit the thing, nothing was destroyed.
Yeah.
This is great. So I was actually talking, and there's a lady in the thing called Patricia, and she said, I actually had a mandate to do it. And it was like, and of course, the hurricane was called Patricia. So it was like, it was really funny because she said, doesn't God have a sense of humor? That he gave a mandate to Patricia to deal with Hurricane Patricia. You know? Yeah, it did. It absolutely did. You know, so trust God. You know, if he gives you a mandate, deal with something. If he doesn't, don't. You know, just leave it, you know.
Can you, like, just send blessing to the area? Or do you have to ask God to bless an area?
I don't think you ever ask God to bless, but because we have a mandate to bring blessing to every family on the earth. It's the specifics. You know, and it's making sure you look something. It's like any situation, I want God's blessing in there. But actually, how that blessing gets released may not be my responsibility. I just have a general thing. I'm called to bless, full stop. And sometimes it's like we have specific things, but I just want to make sure that you don't just do something just because you see a problem.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're made in the image of Christ, and we're being transformed, and he didn't heal everybody.
He didn't. He only did what he saw the Father doing. That's the key to everything. So none of us can function in this stuff unless we're in the heavens. You know, it must be the as it is first. And really, true worship, when we're fulfilling our mandate in serving God, is outworked through our destiny in the daily things God calls us to do. So many people ask me, I want to see my scroll. I want to see my scroll. What's my destiny? I want to see my scroll. You know, and I say, you are seeing it every day. You go before the ark and you ask God to reveal what you want him to do, he wants you to do today. Most people, if they saw their scroll and the whole thing, would then figure out how they could do it. You just need day by day to follow. Now, sometimes he gives you some inklings of what's ahead. I've had some things I've seen, and I've seen that that's coming. And I thought, okay, I need to prepare for that coming. But most of the time, I go before God, go before the ark, present myself as a living sacrifice. What is it that I'm authorized to do today? I want to see what the Father's doing. Then when I'm staying in the realms of heaven, my mountain, whatever he's doing flows. You know, he shows me, not necessarily in a list, but I carry his heart. He writes on the tablets of my heart, so my heart and my desire draw me towards it. And I find myself, I can flow and outwork it every day. And I don't actually need to know what tomorrow's is until tomorrow. No. So living sacrifice is all about the desires of our heart are aligned and they resonate with God's heart. And that's what leads us. You know, not just my heart. So we radiate that energy, that frequency, those love vibrations and all that stuff, healing, sonship, glory of God, manifesting, and we establish our spiritual boundaries. Those are the tent pegs. And don't go beyond them, but don't restrict them expanding. You know, we need to see that there is an increase. But there are seasons where things slow down and you fill, and then you have a depth in there that when you then expand, increases out. That's what happens. So when we engage our spirit in those spiritual atmospheres, we're tuning in. So thinking about the atmosphere here in this room, tune in, be aware of things that are going on in your spheres. You know, I know that I can tune into what's going on at home. You know, because I'm covering that with my spirit, I can tune into it. You have to take time to learn to discern that disturbances that go on. You know, A lot of what we do is everything comes from mandates, you know. So make sure you have a mandate for what you do. You know, that would be one of the biggest things I could say to everyone. Don't do anything without a mandate. You know, no matter how serious it looks, no matter how you think you should do something, make sure you have authorization, because heaven won't recognize what you're doing if you doesn't recognize the authorization that's been given you. So we have, you know, this scripture from Romans 8, that the Spirit testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. If children, heirs also, heirs of God, fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, that we may be glorified with him. So we have to be willing to go through the process of transformation, to be glorified. You know, so that there is a journey of progression in this. For the anxious longing of creation waits eagerly for the revealing of sons of God. Everything is looking at us. Everything is waiting for us. Everything is wanting to respond. And creation responds to sonship. It really, really does. You know, we have a guy at home. He's an older guy, one of the older guys in the church. He's one of three generations in the church. It's great. We've got grandfather and then grandchildren, you know, in the church. It's really great because they really sort of do things together. It's great. And he had this problem with seagulls. He lives by the sea. Seagulls were continually making a mess over his property. They were ripping up bags of garbage and all the stuff, and it was a mess. And he put up with this for a while, and then, you know, because we were teaching government, he said, I don't need to put up with this. You know, this isn't right. This isn't God's blessing for me, for seagulls to be messing up everything. So he went to the court, and he presented a case. Now, sometimes you go to the court and deal for accusations. Sometimes you present a case. He presented a case for something to change. He had a verdict that said change. What happened was a whole load of crows, big blackbirds, built nests at the bottom of his garden, sort of bottom of the field at the bottom of his garden. And they drove away all the seagulls. They just swooped down, drove them away. They didn't make any nests. They didn't have any babies. They didn't cause any hassle. They disappeared. So creation itself answered his sonship and actually dealt with the problem. You know? That's the sort of thing that can happen when we know we are in authority and we get a mandate, which is, it's great. So then it goes on in Romans 8, for creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. Yeah, I just love that. And I don't even know what that means. But I know it's way more than what we're seeing now. Because it's like the freedom of the glory, our glory, how we reflect out the nature of God will bring everything into that freedom that exists. So it's an amazing statement that I really believe that we're coming into. We're transfiguration, I think, is part of that process. You know, having our DNA cleansed, and so we're fully sons and not mixed up with any other seed out there, whether it be serpent seed or any other seed that exists within our DNA. Transformation is so important within communion, the power of the body and blood of Jesus to cleanse us, to deal with iniquity, to bring us into sonship, to unlock the supernatural abilities of sonship in us. You know, I love taking communion, and because I know it's powerful in transformation in our lives. To be transfigured, you know, I want the radiated glory of God to be transfigured and radiating through my life. So, yeah. So, anyway, so what I think we'll do to finish is I would love for you to be able to engage with the realm of the spirit here. So to practice engaging your spirit with the atmosphere here. So to do that, essentially, we already opened our first love gate earlier. So our first love gate is open. So we have a flow. All you have to do is we walk through the gate that way. So yeah, all you have to do is turn the other way and look to engage that flow out into the room. So, again, don't strive. Don't strive. Okay, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I don't do it. Just relax. Some of you may sense something. Some of you may feel something. Some of you will have an intuition about something. Some of you may have the full-blown Hollywood production. That's great. But just practice. You know, don't think you're going to be able to master that necessarily first go. But start. Everyone has to start somewhere with the first step. The first step is just let your spirit begin to expand. You know, just see it. You know, you can see it like a wave, if you like, going out, you know. So it's going out through the gateways, out to the world in this room. You know, let's not go out to the whole of the Dallas yet to see what we can discern. Let's sort of just see what we can discern here. Because I think here there's enough activity going on in the realm of the spirit that I can see that you can tune into. Now, the first, tune into your angels. Find connection with your own angels first. And then maybe see the other angelic things that are here. There's those four angels that I brought here. There may be the living creatures that you will connect with. You know, so those three big central angels that are here, there may be other things that you will connect with. So, again, you just close your eyes. Just relax. And as you just begin to think about the river of life flowing through the first love gate, and that river is just starting to go out through the gateways, streams just flowing down out through the gateways, flowing out through your soul, flowing out around your body, creating an atmosphere around you, just love and joy and peace just flowing out. You're just in that atmosphere of the river of life. Now just let your spirit just reach out around you in that atmosphere and just sense your angels. You may sense them, you may get a real clear impression of who they are. Ask them their name and wait for them to tell you. So just let your spirit engage that realm. You may sense a fragrance, you may feel color, you may have an impression of what they're like standing behind you. Just take a step of faith and talk to them. You might want to just allow your spirit to go out into the spiritual atmosphere here and just engage with the other angels that are here in the room. The angel of transformation is on my left-hand side here, and it has a big axe in its hand, and it has a mandate to chop and break the chains that tether you and restrict your movement on the earth. And that some of those chains are really long, and you may not even have realized they're there, but when you intend to go further, they'll yank you back. So if you feel there's anything that's a chain of restriction, then that angel has an axe to chop that. So you can reach out, come in your spirit and stand and allow that axe to fall and just set you free, to untether you from restricting things. those three sentinel angels of love, joy, and peace, which are here in this place, they have big jugs of living water that they're pouring out. Pouring down love, joy, and peace. You might want to just stand under the flow. Let your spirit just receive what they're pouring out. Some of you may have an understanding of the spheres that you have, and you may want to expand the tent pegs of your life around some of those spheres, some of those mountains. You know, just begin to practice that. Maybe going from Jerusalem, just going out to Judea around your life. Just seeing the tent peg stretched and the canopy extended outwards. Just a wonderful sense of love, joy, and peace just filling this room. Just rest. Just breathe in. Draw in. Just God's love. His peace, His joy. Just filling you. Okay, let's place of rest. You know, if you engage in something like that and you sense something great, you know, if this is maybe the first time you're trying that, don't be too concerned if it was like, oh, I wasn't really sure. You know, it's practice. The more you do things like this, the more easy it is to engage, the more connected you get. All right.
Question. Yeah. And I've always, ever since I can remember, always seen these like smoke rings. I think it's going through the tunnel or something. And I thought it was, she always talked about asking to ascend and descend. But I'm always, like, it seems like I'm always coming down. I'm never ascending, so I just assumed I just,
Well, I think ascending and descending is a description which, because we have a particular mindset, helps us to think. But it really isn't, heaven isn't up there.
Right.
You know, it's actually all around us. So we're more like going in to that realm that's here. But obviously it's described as ascending because that's what helps us clue, you know. But really it's going in. So stepping into that realm and stepping out of that realm, bringing things in. In essence, what we are supposed to do is to be in that realm and flow out. So,
yeah, it seems like, you know, it's like an abiding.
Yeah.
It kind of wraps around. And,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And then it moves, the movement is coming.
Yeah. See, the thing is, when you start to engage in spiritual things, sometimes things can be very specific to you. And that may be, when someone's saying ascending, descending, that's for you what it's like. So you're sensing, this is all around me, I'm encompassed by this. Actually, I seem to be moving in and out of this. Great. Don't try and overanalyze things, really. It's like, just let it flow. You know, because if that for you is what you're feeling when you're engaging, then that's what you go with, you know, because we're all unique, you know. And I think sometimes when someone else says something, we think it should be like that because they say it. Actually, not doesn't mean
so
that way.
You're saying that feelings, be aware of what you're feeling?
Yeah, all your senses involved.
All the
senses? Yeah, all the senses. Be open for all the senses. Because you're looking to engage your spirit and soul in that realm. Because that's when you get the cognitive things that you begin then to work out. But, you know, your spirit, if your spirit steps in and you stay in, then you're just looking to flow out. You know, but a lot of it's practice. We're all learning this stuff. I mean, none of us are like experts. So we're all sort of, whoa, what is this? And where does that fit? And what is that about? Yeah, but the more you create a pathway that goes, you know, as I say, there's the relationship pathway. So it becomes an intimate place, which is maybe what you're feeling. From a place of intimacy, then things can flow. The responsibility pathway is not that necessarily you feel the intimate things while you're doing it, but they come from the fact that you have engaged in intimacy that allows you to flow into it. You know, when I'm sat on a throne, I'm sat on a throne. You know, that's what I'm sat on. I know that it's a throne. I have a crown, a mantle, a scepter, you know, an orb. I sat on the throne and I rule from the throne. So I release things from the throne. So, but I've done that for years. So it's very, very familiar. It's so part of me. I'm not even thinking about the sort of, well, I'm engaging this. And it's just who I am. So when we're becoming us, son, and in maturing in sonship, we're coming into the identity of who we are, and we become more comfortable, familiar with that, and it's simple. And a lot of when people start, they're almost like trying to get, it's the veil that they're getting through, and there are lots of different ways of engaging the veil, you know. And that some people go through tunnels, some people walk up ladders, some people go through mists, you know, so many different ways. They're all basically the same thing, but it's different for us, you know, and that's okay. But once you get more familiar, it's more about the function of what you're doing than the description of where it is, because you're ruling, you're reigning, you're governing, you're legislating. And I'm much less bothered by what it looks like than what I'm doing. Because I can have, oh, I'm describing this wonderful place, or what am I doing there? Well, I'm describing this wonderful place, rather than actually ruling. You know, so actually I'm on my throne. Why am I on my throne? Seated with Christ in heavenly places to rule. So I focused on the rule. And so ultimately, when we come through these things, you will find that you're much less caught up with, well, what does this miss mean, or what does that mean? Actually, I know that I'm there to rule, so that's what I'm doing. You know, and so I'm most of my, whatever I do is done by knowing, you know, because most of what I do, I'm doing with my eyes open all the time, you know. So I'm not that concerned by now, because I've just done it. Yeah.
In the last, I don't know how long it's been, but there's been a phrase that's used, you know, about having a personal relationship with Christ, which, you know, I've thought I've understood that, but could this be another facet of that? Is that you're going to experience these things as an individual, uniquely you.
Yeah.
And that makes it even more personal.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Totally. That's why it's unique, and that's why heaven is like a multiverse environment that's actually created for you to engage it. You know, so when I go on my imagine on my throne, it's very different potentially from other people on their imagine on the throne. So when I go into heaven and when I go, I always engage with water and rivers and pools and waterfalls and gardens. That's it. I know I've talked to people and they go in and it's like being in, I don't know, factory floor or something. I mean, it's just, but they had the same meaning and understanding. It was all there for them. When I, it would be like, what? You think heaven's like that? You know, and some people were talking about they engaged with this baseball diamond and they did this, and it's just like, well, yeah, you know, I've never seen a baseball diamond in heaven, but actually that didn't speak to me, you know, because I don't play baseball, you know? So for me, it's like, God does relate to us in ways because he wants to communicate. So it is very much like that, you know. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know. This is my first time even hearing this, and I don't like it. So I really have nothing. But what came to mind is that while I was worshiping, and I don't know if maybe this was a mandate that I dropped when I was worshiping, because he went back and finished the last scene of a dream I had 2 weeks earlier where I was blocked from getting away from a bull charging, coming up the steps.
Yeah.
I froze in fear. The door was locked, the window was locked. And while I was worshiping, not even thinking about it, all of a sudden, I thought it was just a vision and a motion picture. God put a sword in my hand, and I went down to kill the bull.
Mm.
And when you were talking earlier, I thought, could that be a mandate? And
absolutely.
Put a sword in my hand. I thought it was just like a one-time deal. I don't even know what to think about it. But I thought maybe I was in the courtroom of heaven. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, when we're in an environment of worship and the presence of God is there, then we tend to become a bit more tuned in and sensitive to things that we might not do in our own personal things because we've not developed that. So yes, a sword of the Spirit, the word of God, the authority, mandate to kill the bull, which represents something that's obviously coming against you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's for you. It's just saying, hey, when God gives me a mandate, he gives me a sword. For others, it may be come in a scroll. You know, but I've been given mandates with swords. You know, very first time I was given a mandate, a sword, it was like I just didn't want it. It's like I seriously didn't want it. I went to a conference quite a number of years ago with Bill Johnson and Jill Austin while she was alive. And it's like every time, and Bill Johnson spoke, it was just great, good. Jill Austin spoke and I started to shake, like violently. I could not stop shaking. And I was, what is going on? All she had to do was open her mouth. And it was getting more and more violent. And I'm there, and it's like, God was in front of me with his sword. You know, and it's like, I knew what a sword meant. I knew it was going to be to divide, and I knew it was going to create problems. Because it was about bringing justice, and it was like bringing a divide, drawing with a sword. And I was like, I don't want to do that. You know, I'm really laid back. I'm a nice guy. I don't want to bring a sword. It's like, I don't want to do this. And so I shook for 3 days until I said yes. You know, it's like God was just, well, I'm going to shake you until you give up. And in the end, he put this sword in my hand, two hands, a two-handed sword. This is a great big thing. Yeah, you know, I'm having it in my hands, and I feel the weight of this sword, and all of a sudden it's just like, boldness came, you know? And it's like when I took the sword. Before I took the sword, I had fear. I didn't want to create controversy with people that would. I would end up bringing some sort of judgment that I would end up causing problems. You know, and I knew what you know. Jesus said, you know, I come to bring a sword. You know, so I'm aware of what swords does. I mean, he divided a whole people. You know, so I was sort of like this, and I shook. You know. Until I gave in, you know, and since then he's given me a couple of swords, which you know, I was a bit more obedient in accepting earlier, so I didn't have to shake so much. But definitely, It can be a clear mandate of authority, because that's what it is, isn't it? The mandate is an authorization where you're given.
When he offered you the sword, you knew what it was for.
I knew it was to draw a line in the sand and offer people an opportunity of stepping over. And this was for us locally in the church at the time. And this was before, you know, I'd been into heaven and all that stuff. And this was before that. And I knew, now I know that what that sword was about this, things that I'm called to bring, because it does create a divide. And some people don't like it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I fortunately, you know, God's grace and God's mercy, you know, as much as stuff I put out there, I get very, very little flack. Very little flack. You know, we've had over a million hits on our YouTube stuff. And I can count on two hands the number of negative comments. Wow. Yeah, which is ridiculous, really, but it's God's thing. And then, and some people, they get, hammered, and they're not even saying anything like stuff I'm saying. Because I think there's a protection of God around me, but that was what the sword was for. And when I started to bring some of this stuff within our church setting, some people just didn't like it, and it created a choice, But I knew that it was going to be something which was like that. So I really don't want to do that, Can you choose somebody else? But in the end, I gave up. But he did shake me pretty severely. I mean, it's really embarrassing, isn't it, when you just get shaken. Everyone else is sitting there listening and you're shaking like a rag doll. I mean, it's no problem when years ago in John Wimber meetings, everyone was falling around his seats and all. It's like, great, just join the party. But it's just like, no one else was doing this. And I was just like, oh, no. But to start with, I didn't know what it was. And then when I did know what it was, then I had a choice. I was like, I'm not sure I want that responsibility. That was what it was about. So I know the problems people have accepting responsibility. But in the end, it was just like, I said yes. And I know that I am blessed and the protection. Now, should things happen where things, I know that I have to keep my heart right and bless people. So if people don't like what I say, bless them. Everyone's empowered to have their own opinion and their own thing, but I know if people get to know me, then they'll know what my heart's like, and it's different. But most of the people who are out there, they never want to get to know anybody. They just, and then most people don't even listen to stuff. They just sort of say things. But fortunately, that's not what's happened with us, and I'm very blessed, really. Yeah. Yeah.
Back whenever I was in the UK, the Lord showed me a sword and he told me to grab it, but I had a white glove on.
Mm.
And at the end of the sword, it was fire on it.
Yeah.
And I had heard you say at one point that was a fiery angel, that could be a fiery angel. So I'm not sure if it was a fiery angel or a sword that he wanted me to take.
Well, this sword was a fiery sword that he gave me. Yes, there are. One of the fiery swords was an angel, and the one that's whizzing around all ways. That's an angelic being, one of the Kaled. But a fiery sword, again, some of these things, when it comes to symbolism, it's the symbolism that speaks to you that counts. So, I know that the sword, for me, speaks of judgment. It speaks of drawing a line, and in this sense, a line of fire that people have to cross, because you cannot cross into these things without going through the fire. Whatever route you go, ultimately there's fire to cross through, because it's fire that changes and purifies us. It's fire. They had to go through the fiery sword to go into the way of the tree of life. It's like we have to go through the cross. So I'm aware that these things are, but in a sense it's like anything like that that you're unsure, I would always take it back to God and just ask, what is it that you're speaking to me about? Because God isn't giving you the thing so you don't know what it means. But often he won't tell you directly because he's waiting for you to go back to him so you can build up your ability to hear his voice and talk to him. You know, I mean, I used to do a lot of interpretation of things. I used to interpret dreams and symbolism a lot because I'm gifted to do it. You know, but actually I stopped doing it when people were, you know, coming to me to do it. So then I was like, no, okay, let's do this together. You know, let's step in heaven now and let's ask God to speak to you and show you what this is. Now, because I'm with them, sometimes they find it easier for that to happen because I create an environment with them that they feel more comfortable and secure in. And so they hear easier, you know, because that's, you can do that. You know, that's why sometimes it's good to do something with people, because it helps. You know, a lot of people say, you know, when we do activations online, oh, it was really great when we did. When I tried to do it myself, it wasn't as easy. You know, because you do create an environment. I do have a key to open up heaven for people to engage. But ultimately, it's just so that then they can go and find that path for themselves. You know, that's the important thing of everything. It's everyone needs to be able to hear God for themselves. But you need to hear God the way you'll hear him. You know, and it may come, for me, it's just conversation. You know, for you, it may be impression or feeling, or you'll just sense, you know, this fiery sword is for something. But, you know, it'll be something significant when you receive a fiery sword. Yeah.
Quite a bit for me. She's already shown up four times.
Yeah.
Different times. And one time she showed up, she gave me, acknowledged her, and she went away. And then the Lord actually brought her and introduced her again to me. And then one time she showed up, and she gave me arrows. I said, well, what about the bow? And she didn't give me the bow yet. You know, so I'm waiting for the bow.
Okay.
And the arrows are supposed to do something too, right? You know, and I guess the bow is...
Well, arrows go a bit further than you can use the sword.
Okay.
So, you know. But if you'd be given the arrows, then prepare the arrows. Because you may need to prepare what the arrows are. So when you get the bow, you know what to do with them. So don't think, oh, I haven't got the bow yet, I can't do anything. Ask what each arrow represents, what you're supposed to do with them, where you're going to fire them. You know, anything like that, I just want to know. You know, I would just ask God, you know, if you've given me this, do you want me to know any more about it? But Joan of Arc, you know, is one of, you know, obviously, Cloud of Witnesses. They do show up at times, and they do come with things, and they do sense, you sense, okay, What did Joan of Arc do? You know, she had a mission, you know. And sometimes doing a bit of research about Joan of Arc would be a good thing.
I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
No.
She's called them the Maid of Orleans. Yeah. Yeah, well, you don't have to end up like her.
Right.
You know? Although there may be some fire involved in your process.
Yes. And there has been.
Yeah.
Okay, so
we've done the Academy Joan of Arc a bunch of times.
And in the angels, I saw angels going around putting coals on people's heads. And then I saw something that looked like an ice cube. But it's kind of blue and clear.
All right, yeah.
But it was a square ice cube, but it was spinning like a top.
Mm. Yeah, Metatron's cube.
I was going to say Metatron, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good place to go. Yeah.
Go back.
Go into it, yeah.
Okay.
What is it? I've heard of it, but I don't know what that is.
I can't answer that without some diagrams, probably. Metatron is keykeeper and timekeeper. Metatron's cube connects governmental spheres. And, you know, Moses had the tablets, and they were given to him as a blue sapphire cube. We think it's a flat screen. When you read back and you look at the Hebrew, It was a cube, two cubes. They contained within revelation of the government of heaven for the earth. When I've been in Metatron's cube, in the cube, because the Metatron's cube is the center of a series of geometric shapes that work together governmentally. And the first time we encountered it, we were in a bench of 12 meeting, and we felt, let's just engage heaven a moment. You know, one of those things is like, I think God wants to show us something. Let's go and engage. So we all engaged, came out, and a couple of people shared some stuff they saw, and then everyone else was quiet. So I saw this geometric shape, which was sort of like a pyramid shape coming out of a cube shape. So I saw that. And it was like, that's a bit weird. So then I sort of looked around, and people weren't sharing it. So I had sort of an inkling that they may have seen something that they weren't prepared to share. So I said, come on, let's hear what you actually saw. So they all started drawing these shapes. And they had six or seven of us actually saw the same thing from different perspectives. And when we put it all together and we actually looked at it, we thought, what is this? And there's the tree of life shape in it, which is a sort of oblong shaped thing, which has spheres, together, and they're all governmental spheres. I mean, some really good YouTube things that shows how it's drawn and the different 12 to 13 spheres that all join governmentally to create this shape. And when you look at it, there's the Star of David shape within it. There's multiple shapes within it which are to do with governmental spheres, but they all center around the cube. And when I stepped in the cube and I was in this blue place, it's like it's full of the manifold wisdom of God in multi-dimension facets. So it's like you're inside a gem and all the facets are things that are representation of God. And I mean, it's a beautiful place. But there, there's a lot more to it in terms of the shapes and how the shapes interact governmentally and how you can go back into spheres and how they interact. Because heaven operates on a very sort of geometric pattern. Also connected with the circle of the deep and 12 chancellor's houses and things, governmental things. Yeah, all that top head. It would be, because it's one of those things that you have to see. Now, I've got lots of diagrams that show representations of it in one of the sessions I've got somewhere, which you might then, I've seen that somewhere, or I sense something to do with that, because a lot of people see aspects of it but don't see the whole thing. And the cube is a central aspect of it that all the other shapes are built around, and they carry how dimensions work together in heaven to affect government. So there are spheres that interact and connect with other spheres. It's so hard to explain it without the diagram.
Could you just, one more time, say what the tree of life looked like?
The tree of life from a geometric shape looks like a extended sort of a triangle shape, then it goes long, and then a triangle shape at the end. So it's like a long crystal thing. And each of the areas... That's the sort of Metatron's cube thing.
The tree of life is
one of the geometric shapes contained within it. You also have the seed of life shape within it. I mean, there's so much. I mean, it's such a deep thing. I mean, I don't really talk about it a lot. To be honest. If you have no resonance with it, then just forget it. I had no connection to it whatsoever until it was like, you're showing six or seven of us this thing. What do you mean? Why would you do that? What actually does it mean? So for us, it was something we needed to pursue because God showed us all of it. And I'd never heard of Metatron's cube at that point in time. I was just in this cube, my part of it, and seeing this shape. But it has had significance for us in understanding how we work together with our bench of 3, 12, 7, how government functions geometrically, and there's way more to that, But yeah.
New, but it's not is it being revealed more? Is there something about DNA that's Joshua generated? I don't know.
Yeah, everything's about DNA.
Yeah.
Because
I've never heard that obviously in the church. You know?
In a sense, all what we would call spiritual warfare is over DNA. Our DNA, we have two strands of DNA which come from our parents, and they contain a genetic record that goes right back to the beginning. Those two strands, when we get born again, receive a third strand in the center, which is of light, which is our spirit coming alive and bringing light back into our DNA. The order of Melchizedek, and Melchizedek itself, says he has no genealogy. So he has no mother and father, which is an indication that the order of Melchizedek, those who will function in sonship according to the government of God, have to deal with their DNA so they don't have a record being polluted from the past that's going to affect their future. So, in that, within our actual natural strands of DNA, we have our parents, grandparents, and if you go back, sort of like we have half our parents' DNA each, and then each of those were half of their parents, so we have a whatever that is, a quarter or an eighth of our grandparents' DNA. Then you go back, so we have a little bit of a lot going way back. Now, some of that DNA carried seed, which are sequences which are not human. Seed of serpent, Cain seed, Nephilim seed, there are certain angelic seed, that has been in to pollute our DNA so that we could not be pure sons. So Jesus comes from a pure line, which is why Noah was pure in his generations, and his son and the line of Sam went right through, that he had a pure line within his DNA. Many of us, most of us, all of us, don't, actually. So there's stuff that needs sorting out. Now, that's just on the sequencing of our DNA that contain code which triggers things. DNA contains codes which triggers behaviors and reacts to certain things. And, you know, there's some good teaching out there about it and different things like that. When you engage the communion, you're engaging with the DNA of God that contains within it the record of who you were without the pollution. So when you take communion, you can apply it to your DNA to purify the seed and to bring you back into the right DNA that you should have. And that just brings you back to the start, that then you need to take on the DNA of God and the nine strands of God's DNA, so you end up with 12 strands. You know, and some people talk about the more strands that go with each four of them because there are four codons with each time, loads of stuff. But it's important that there's a new sort of area of science that has evolved over the last 10, 15 years, which is called epigenetics. And they used to think epigenetic changes had to take place over a long time. They called it evolution or mutation. Sometimes it could be mutated by radiation. So you had, when atomic bombs went off and different things, potentially genetics material could be changed through mutation. Obviously, there's so much genetic changes, like you get conditions that are genetic conditions, which are either certain DNA strands are mutated or changed or switched off or switched on. So, you know things like Down syndrome and things like that are genetic issues. Again, those can be cleansed and healed and restored. Within our DNA, the epigenetic factors are not actually DNA strands themselves, but they're methylated groups which attach themselves to DNA, which actually create triggers to behavior. And alcoholism is one. And what they found is that within one generation, epigenetic changes could take place to DNA that could be passed on to the next generation, within one generation. So we can have those things, again, cleansed by our taking communion. There can be iniquity attached to our genetic material, which causes us this bias into certain behavioral patterns. Even in the natural sense, we may have a predisposition to certain diseases that only get triggered when the environment's created, like diabetes. You know, you could have in your family line certain triggers within your DNA, because your DNA itself has about 3% which codes to how you look. And all the mother and father characteristics that produced how you look and all those certain things. In the 97% that they used to call junk DNA, they now realize is full of sequences that actually is like a language. And when the Russians were exploring the human genome, they actually found that this language could be affected by sound and light. So they modulated sound on a laser beam into DNA, and they've effectively resequenced patterns of DNA. Whereas in the Western side, they tried to do gene splicing, which was to mechanically splice DNA and into things. So that whole area is filled with triggers and switches. Within there, let's say you have a trigger within your DNA for diabetes, and you live a healthy life all your life, you don't overstretch your system and immune system, and you don't overstretch by eating too much and getting clogged arteries and all that stuff, then that may never trigger in your life. But when you have an environment that triggers certain things, then that switch will switch, and all of a sudden you'll find out that your pancreas is not producing enough insulin, and you'll end up being diabetes. Now, that could be mature onset diabetes. You know, there are type 1, type 2. There's different diabetes. You know, I used to work in a hospital lab, so I used to test for it all. So, you know, but essentially we all want our DNA to be restored to its original condition, the pattern that is contained within the record that we have within Christ that will bring us back into sonship, really. And so communion is such a powerful thing. If you feel you want to do that, maybe. I mean, I just take communion every day, focus it in. Now, I was shown particular streams, sequences of seed within my DNA. I found it really uncomfortable. When I started doing this, I would go to take communion, and I'd get flashbacks of stuff that were from sometimes even before the flood. There were things that were encoded in my DNA, which were, like, really horrible. So I had some things to focus communion into to deal with those things in my life. And you know, the whole thing with there are different levels of change and transformation. You have the Hebrews 4:12. The word of God is living and active, powerful to the dividing of soul and spirit. So there are factors which are soul factors which are leading us, which should be spiritual factors, so we can divide and separate and get them in the right order. There are the thoughts and intentions of your heart, the motives, including the trading floor motives that are in our heart. And then there's the bone and marrow. So the marrow is the source of the blood within the bone. And literally, when they presented a sacrifice for offering, they had a special knife that split open the backbone to reveal the marrow. So everything had to be presented before the Lord as a sacrifice. So when I present myself as a living sacrifice, I say to God, you're free to split me open right down to my backbone, because I want the word of God and your truth to expose anything in my DNA which may be a source that needs purification. So I do that every day. But I take communion every day and apply the prayers. We have communion prayers which are very specifically used to target that. They're available on our website to download. Okay. All right.